Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's a show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And it's so delightful to have everyone with us here as we saunter into Christmas week. And then there was someone I wanted to say something about. Someone who died. No, did I miss it? I wanted to mention someone who died, but I've lost track of who it was. Well, that's pretty bad. You know, when I die, I hope everyone keeps track. I hope everybody notices. Yeah, well, there was... he's not dead yet. That's the deal. All right, so it was Rush Limbaugh. Anyway, before Rush Limbaugh dies, I did want to address, because it seems like Rush is... He's battling cancer, and he doesn't have much more time among us. And so I wanted to address Rush Limbaugh because there's going to be a celebration amongst the left that's really going to show how vicious and cruel and heartless they all are when they bare their teeth with delight at the death of Rush Limbaugh. And so I just wanted to take note that I haven't I wanted to make note, actually. I have not been able to listen to Rush Limbaugh on any serious or regular basis since sometime during the Obama administration. I can't remember, but it's probably been over 10 years. But when I first encountered Rush Limbaugh, I got out of service and I rented a tiny little furnished apartment, furnished with all lemon yellow furniture, a studio apartment, and I bought a radio and I woke up. I set my radio for 9 a.m. because I was no longer in the service and I was going to sleep in. And I awoke and I was awakened, I suppose I should say. I was awakened to the intro of Rush Limbaugh, which was a song that I was not familiar with from a band that I would have never listened to because they were horrible. So the one thing, that, and I won't even mention them by name because of how horrible they are. But Rush Limbaugh introduced me to the music of this particular horrible band that I never would have been familiar with. And they hate him for it. I think it was the Pretenders, who I didn't want to mention. But anyways, because I actually couldn't remember. That's why I wasn't going to mention him by name. Rush Limbaugh, I have listened in recently just a few times because... listening to Rush Limbaugh was a formative moment in my political awakening. I had been overseas for 4 years. I never was involved in politics, didn't know anything about anything. And that first morning as a civilian, I woke up to bum, bum, ba-li, bum, boo-dee-dee-dee-dee. So anyway, and that was 1990, I think. That would have been the spring of 1990. And so Rush seems to have... been humbled more significantly of late than he ever was, although no one ever called Rush Limbaugh a humble person. But he seems to have been humbled by just the circumstances of life and death, really death. The Rush has been blessed with the knowledge of relatively imminent death for several months. And so we hope that God has gotten Rush Limbaugh's attention to the point where Rush has actually humbled himself and all of that. And so we wish the best to Rush Limbaugh. He's going to die soon, but guess what? So are we all. Relatively speaking, if you look back into the 6,000 years of human history, the little blip of yours or mine, the 70 or 80 years that we're given are a relatively small little blip. So... we should all be humbled before God, and hopefully before we're humbled by, a terminal disease. But, but quite often that's what it takes with people, is some terminal situation. So anyway, I just want to say that I hope, wish the best for Rush Limbaugh in the afterlife, this life and the next. And just be ready for the viciousness of the left upon Rush's death, which, by the way, will be a culturally significant event. I predict Rush Limbaugh's funeral, if it's allowed to be, will be attended by more people than any other event in American history since, I don't know when, a long time. It'll be a lot of people, trust me. All right, so let's move on from that. We'll get past Rush Limbaugh. I want to address Julian Assange and Edward Snowden because a number of my conservative host colleagues, although they're not colleagues, peers, I would say, have been coming out every day, it seems. Another so-called conservative comes out for the pardon of Julian Assange and or Edward Snowden. Now, was Snowden already pardoned? Now I can't recall. It seems to me that the treacherous and traitorous Barack Obama already, or no, he, Barack, he pardoned the tranny, the sergeant. Oh, yeah. I can't remember his name. The fake chastity, charity, whatever her name, his name. I can't remember. Anyway, Julian Assange and Edward Snowden should be arrested and put on trial. And if convicted of what it appears they have done, they should both be executed for treason. Now, I know, that goes against the grain of, who was the latest with the Adam's apple, the giant Adam's apple and the skinny neck? The really creepy looking one who looks like she's out of an old painting of witches around a cauldron with the bleach blonde hair. Yeah, Coulter. Ann Coulter's the latest to come out. Anyway, the governments that Assange and Snowden spied on obviously were filled with corrupt elements and corrupt deeds and all of that. But the authority that these two spies undermined, the authority that they undermine is ordained by God, and the confidential work of those authorities should not be leaked under penalty of perjury and, or I'm not perjury, of treason and death. So they should both be tried and executed if convicted. And so I'm going to hold to that position, and I will not be convinced otherwise by the likes of the Adam's apple over there. All right, so let's go on. We'll get into the news of the week. We'll start with the war file. We have a United States Marine. This is according to AmericanMilitaryNews.com. A United States Marine is accused of traveling from North Carolina to Haiti with a bunch of guns. He had a bunch of guns in his luggage, and he got busted at the airport. This U.S. Marine was named Jacques-Yves Sébastien de Rousseau. And after he was convicted, he was just recently convicted of trying to smuggle guns into Haiti. And he said what he wanted to do was he wanted to first teach Haitian soldiers how to shoot properly. And that then he planned to help the Haitian people. And he wanted to go into Haiti, he says, wearing the uniform of a military that has been established. I take that to mean wearing the uniform of an established military and defeat the thugs in Haiti and eventually become the president of Haiti. So that's what Jean-Yves Sébastien de Rousseau, United States Marine, that was what was in his heart. He wanted to go in as a United States Marine, train up some troops, kill off all the bad guys, and take over as president of Haiti. And so, anyway, the kid's heart is in the right place, that's all. He just needs to get really better at smuggling things. That's the only real problem I have with what he's done here. So he could have come up with a better plan for the smuggling. So, I mean, you got people smuggling things in and out of everywhere around Haiti. And anyway, maybe just a bit naive there, Jacques-Yves Sébastien. Anyway, I think that his sentence should be that he should be immediately installed as president of Haiti, and then he should have to deal with that. Can you imagine having to suffer that? Anyway, good luck to the kid. You know, a lot of times great political leaders start their careers in prison, which, and I think he's going to prison. Let me see. Did they get into his sentence here? That doesn't say exactly what they're going to do with him, But I hope they throw him in jail for a good long while and he stews on it and he comes up with a better smuggling plan. All right. Now, in the politics file, Emmanuel Macron, are you familiar with who Emmanuel Macron is? He asked his extremely attractive audio engineer.
Canada just doesn't.
Canada or France. That's exactly what I thought. One of the two, right? It's one of those two light in the loafers looking, what are they called? Prime ministers, right? Either him or the guy from Canada, pretty much interchangeable. You know, they both look like they would test positive for syphilis or something like that before, or gonorrhea before COVID. But Emmanuel Macron, I'm sorry. Did I jump the... He tested positive for...
So which is it? Canada?
Canada. Or no, I'm sorry, France. All right, it is France. He is the prime... Oh, he's the president of France, whatever that means. He's tested positive for the coronavirus. And listen to this. The Newsmax, I believe this is Newsmax, which is allegedly a conservative outlet, says it is not immediately clear where he contracted the virus. And I'm thinking, when before did we ever ask or even wonder about where anyone contracted anything? Well, I mean, if there was a criminal case and he did indeed have syphilis and there was a woman accusing him, then it could matter. Then we might want to know where exactly did you... But I mean, this is a respiratory aerosol virus and... It's never going to be clear where he contracted it. And never before in human history have we obsessed over where anyone contracted any sort of cold virus. But now we do. The president of the Republic has been diagnosed positive for COVID-19 today. This diagnosis was made following a PCR test performed at the onset of slight symptoms. Said a statement from, whatever, the president's office. So the old PCR test. So I saw an interview with the fellow who claims to invented polymerase chain reaction tests. And I just don't know. The guy seems to have lost his mind later in his life. You know, I've noticed this about a lot of people who do brilliant things when they're young. And then they tend to crack up and flip out when they get older. And this guy seems to be one. But anyway, in the interview, he said that his test is appropriate only for detecting DNA. He said it's not appropriate for detecting viruses. But then again, he seems to have lost his mind there. He died in 2017. I'm still researching, but his testimony in an unrelated interview about a different virus years ago, decades ago, is just another piece of evidence that these PCR tests being used to test everybody positive for case. He's got a case. It's another case. We've got a case. We've got an outbreak of cases. There's cases everywhere. It just seems that maybe the PCR test is inappropriate and that we're getting a lot of false positives. And that, again, until Donald Trump steps on the final step of that helicopter, the door closes and he actually physically leaves the grounds of the White House. And until Joe Biden has actually said the swearing in, where he lies to everyone and says he's going to defend the Constitution, until that happens, this COVID hysteria must be pushed to ever higher reaches of hysteria. And the PCR test is a... Anyway, so Emmanuel has contracted the coronavirus. He will isolate for the next 7 days, but continue, unfortunately, to run the country. All of his trips have been cancelled. Mm-hmm. Yes, that was according to his spokeswoman, because here in France, men are no longer allowed to speak in declarative statements. And so we only have spokeswomen who speak in declarative sentences. Men will no longer do that. Let's see. Here. Now, this is Newsmax. Again, allegedly conservative, but remember, folks, all these conservatives, including Newsmax and others, fully bought into the hysteria back in the early days. Why? It was really good for ratings. And so they're all to blame, and they're all corrupt. They should all fail and be exposed as liars, hypocrites, and money-grubbing scum. who threw aside 150 years of medical advancement and knowledge for a bunch of clicks and for ratings and to promote a hysteria that in the end will be viewed by historians as the beginning of the end of Western civilization. And so, you know, speaking of the end of Western civilization, as if Emmanuel Macron were not enough of a signpost along the highway to hell, we go into the dim new world file, where a former Facebook executive named, I can't pronounce this, Chamath Palihapitiyatapatiyatiya. We'll just call him Cham. Cham. Anyway, Chamath Palihapitiya. You know why? It's because none of the white kids go in for the hard sciences anymore. So, you know, if you want an engineer, you want somebody who really knows science, he's got to have 11 vowels in his first name alone. It's just an observation. It's fine by me. You know, all the white kids are downing OxyContin and other mood-altering pills and getting degrees in, I don't know, film, modern dance interpretation. Critical race theory. Hard to find a white kid to run your company when he's on OxyContin and he's got a degree in critical race theory. So you end up with Chamath Palihapitiyatapatiya Tilapia. This former Facebook executive has suggested that people vaccinated against the coronavirus should, quote, all wear a mask of a special design or color, unquote. Yes, everyone that gets vaccinated should all wear a mask of a special design or color so that they can signal to others that they are vaccinated.
Oh yeah, nobody cheats that.
Nobody would ever cheat on that. It would have an RFID code and everything else. Anyway, some people have compared this to the Star of David with the Nazis. I think that's a bridge too far. I think this is just hysterical, childish stupidity. This isn't diabolical like with the Star of David. That was a whole different thing. This is an idiot child making a very stupid statement about a completely irrational and delusional state that we all find ourselves in, or at least Chamath Palihapitiya Tilapia finds himself in. By the way, he's now the CEO of Virgin Galactic. This guy's a chairman of a publicly held corporation, and we should all wear our masks, especially after we're vaccinated. Did anybody stop to tell Chalupa Tilapia here that after you get vaccinated, you shouldn't have to wear a mask? Hey, Chalupa Tilapia, do you have any idea? What is your degree in again? I mean, please. That's right, they can't let it go. They cannot let it go. They have to keep wearing the mask even after you're vaccinated or you've had it and you've tested positive for antibodies. Even after you've died from it, You still, they should be a special color-coded mask for people who died of coronavirus. That way, we can just keep it all going. Let's see. I want to start then. Well, I've already started. This is actually the second segment. I want to thank the gate agent at Southwest Airlines who approached me and said, "Sir, could you please put on your mask?" And I said, "Yeah, I'll put on my mask." And then I lollygagged for a little bit, but then I put it on. And then he moseyed over to me after three or four minutes as we were boarding. He said, "I'm really sorry I had to do that, but, you know, I had this old lady come over and she was complaining. And so I'm sorry." He said, "I hate being a mask police." And, you know, I said, "Hey, I can appreciate your situation. I really feel sorry for you." And, yeah. So we had a moment there, me and him. You know, we connected.
Careful, don't connect with.
Well, I mean, it was just a human connection, right? Okay. And then at the other airport, I had the check-in guy, right? Because I've made it a point, I will not put on a mask unless I'm told to. And then my goal is to try to say something to make them think. And I have my brand new line that I've been waiting to use. So I'm standing in line waiting to check my bag, and the check-in guy, check-in attendant, says, "Sir, can you please put on your mask?" And I'm thinking, finally, I can use my new line. I've been waiting. I haven't had a chance. So I said, "My mask stopped working, and I had to throw it away. Is yours still working?" Well, this guy's a pro. He never missed a beat. Not even a beat. He says, "Hey, be sure to change your batteries next time before you come. I'll go get you a mask." And then he went and he gave me a brand new fresh mask out of one of those plastic packets with that little white label with the red stamp, the Chinese quality control stamp, still in the package, which was kind of ironic, I thought, that, you know, we're buying all the masks from China. It's not that was part of the big conspiracy. It's just that's how it works out, because pretty much everything is made in China. So if we were suddenly going to have to need a billion masks, well, that was going to benefit China just by the way things are. It's just the way things are. And then now listen about, I got to tell you about the lady in the security line. So I'm standing in the security line waiting to go through the other humiliation that we've all learned to accept, which is being electronically stripped naked and body cavity searched by the TSA before we can get on an airplane. Remember when we all thought that was insane, that we would go through that? And now it's just part of the, yeah. So anyway, I'm standing in line, and I don't have a mask on because I don't have a mask on. I'm not planning on robbing the place or anything like that. And so here comes a lady. Frazzled hair, overly done makeup, right, in the eye area, which is all you can see in the eye area. She's got the super blue eye shadow, you know, that looks like a cartoon from the 70s. And her hair's all a mess. And she's got two masks on. She's got the N95 covered by the surgical. And then she's got a face shield over that. And she's wearing horn-rimmed glasses, which look like goggles. And then she's got the gloves on that are at least one size too big and all wrinkled up. And she's sauntering up, trying to keep the handle of her bag up under her elbow as she searches through her pocketbook for her ID and for her boarding pass. And she happens to saunter within about 2 feet of me before she finally looks up and realizes she's standing within 2 feet of another human being. And then you can see the horror on her face as she realizes that human being does not have a mask on. And so she immediately skitters back to her. She's at 12 feet probably by the time she, you know, the color starts to return to her face. And anyway, I saw the terror in her eyes, and I immediately said, "Hey, if I'm scaring you, I'll put on a mask." Because the last thing I want to do is to be responsible for someone's mental and then physical breakdown right there in the security line, because that would inconvenience a lot of people who would be coming up behind her. And then, of course, for her own mental health, you know. And So I said, if I'm scaring you, I will put on a mask. And then she did the nervous kind of glance to one side, glance to the other side, avoiding eye contact, as if to say, yes, please put on a mask, but I don't want to actually tell you to put on a mask because I'm so embarrassed to be looking so tremendously foolish. But I'm just scared. Anyway, so I put on my tyranny treason mask. I have a mask to which I've affixed the word tyranny and the word treason. I put that on, and then... And then we talked for a little while, and then she actually seemed astonishingly rational when we talked about where the virus came from and how the Chinese were responsible. And anyway, it was a very strange situation. And then should I do the? I'll do the flight attendant later because that's do the flight attendant now because I was on a Southwest flight with possibly the greatest flight attendant in the history of flight attendants. Now, the main reason was because this was a straight male, which this was a straight black male on a Southwest flight. And I hadn't really noticed whether or not a lot of flight attendants are black or white or Mexican because I don't notice that all that much. But I've noticed that it's hard to find one that's straight. I mean, if they're male, okay, that just stands out. First of all, most of them are women. And then most of the ones who are men are not straight men. And so this one stood out because he was a straight black male. And he had the funniest pre-flight instructions bit you ever heard. I wish I'd have been recording it because I would have stolen jokes from this guy all day long. But the things I remember most vividly were when he came on over the public address system there on the plane with the old, "Welcome to Southwest, ladies and gentlemen. I just want to inform you that this flight will be a masquerade flight." That's right. "We will all be required to wear our masks for the entire flight. So please, don your mask with me and enjoy this masquerade flight along with all of us." And so I cracked up at that. I mean, burst out side-split laugh. It virtually silence on the aircraft. I don't know if maybe I was the only one who got the feed, or I didn't have headphones in. I didn't understand why no one else was laughing. I thought it was hilarious. "Ladies and gentlemen, in the unlikely event of a loss of cabin pressure, we here on the crew will be wishing we hadn't come to work today. While you will see an entirely different mask magically appear before your eyes. And yes, that means it's time to take off your mask and put on our more stylish mask. Now, please do not confuse the two. We do not want to have to fit this mask to your blue, gasping face. We'll have plenty going on by then, trust me." Anyway, that was... what else? Can I remember any of this guy's joke? Oh, as we're landing, he comes on. "Ladies and gentlemen, please make sure that your tray tables are up and that your seat is adjusted into its upright and most uncomfortable position as we prepare for landing." And then after the plane lands, which was probably the best landing I've experienced in my 50,000 flights or however many flights I've been on. I've been on a bunch of them. He clicked. "Oh, ladies and gentlemen, what did you think of that landing?" And so there's like four of us. We start clapping. You know, hoping we get something started because it was a smooth landing. I mean, that's something that you notice. Nothing. Crickets. So I'm the only one laughing at this guy's jokes. Me and I think there were maybe three other people. You could hear their muffled laughs through the masks there. But anyway, we finally get on the ground. "Hello, ladies and gentlemen, as you unbuckle your seatbelt just a few inches from your seatmate there and all those around you, please, as you move into the aisles, do your best to observe 6 feet of social distance while exiting the aircraft." And I'm busting out laughing at this guy's. "And as you exit, ladies and gentlemen, please keep the masquerade going with the masks firmly up over your nose and snug under your chin until you completely exit the aircraft, at which point we will all taste of sweet liberation together. And one last thing, on behalf of your entire Southwest crew, we wish you a Merry Christmas, and please
Remember not to forget the real reason for the season.
That's right. He slipped that one in at the end. It was hilarious. It was inspiring. Anyway, I 10 times I laughed out loud. Maybe five. It's probably 100 people on this plane, and maybe five other people laughed. I guess it's hard to find humor when you're packed together inside an aircraft at close quarters with other people, and they're breathing and they're spitting on you, and they're full of pathogens and infectious disease that could kill all of us in the midst of a global pandemic. Anyway, on the way out, I walked up to the front and I looked this guy eye to eye. I had my mask on. He had his mask on. We're both just trying to get through this thing. And I said, man, you are all right. And I stuck out my hand, and he shook my hand. Hey, take a listen. Tell me, do you like what you hear? If they'll turn you on, just say a word, I'm gone. Really, I know, ain't nothing wrong with your ear. Hey, check it all out. Better look now, it just might be too late. My look gon' change tonight. It's gotta be a better life. Take a picture, sweetie, I ain't got time to wait. But baby, I'm a star. You might not know it now. Baby, what's I are, I'm a star. I don't want to stop till I reach the top. Say it. If I say it, nothing comes too easy. When you got it, baby, nothing comes too hard. You see what I'm all about. If I got scream and shout. Your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back, folks. We've got to get to some news. We did a lot of news from the airlines because, well, that was my life for a little while. But I want to go into the Justice File. ABC7 in California reports that the Orange County Sheriff and other officials are fighting a court order to cut the population of inmates. A judge ordered the sheriff to reduce jail population by 50% due to COVID-19 cases. The sheriff's response, I have no intention of releasing these individuals. All right, I like that. Let's see, the judge's order stems from an ACLU lawsuit. As you can well imagine, we have a quote here from Jacob at the ACLU. Public safety does not just mean crime. Public safety also means, is there a hospital bed if you get sick? And if there's an outbreak in the jail, there will not be hospital capacity in Orange County for people on the outside who get COVID. Unquote. So the ACLU contends that public safety does not mean crime. Okay, well, public health does not mean the ACLU has anything to say about anything at all to do with anything to do with any of that, because that's just insanity. And now that we have lawyers and judges making rulings on COVID-19, perhaps it's obvious to everyone who hasn't quite caught on yet that this is all bogus. It's political. It's a scam. It's a sham. It's a ripoff. The greatest mass delusion in the history of mankind. The greatest hysterical spastic flip out ever. Embarrassing to even have been alive during this. Anyway, the sheriff and the DA. Is it the DA here? I'm not sure who this is. Anyway, it's not the ACLU, I can assure you that. Yeah, the sheriff and the DA argue that the release of almost 2,000 criminals would create more crimes and more victims. Yeah, yeah. The DA, in fact, can document that last year when they released low-level offenders, I'm sorry, earlier this year, they released so-called low-level offenders because of COVID-19! Ah! During the, and all those have committed new crimes at nearly three times the normal rate. That's right. Here in America, there's a normal rate of crime that, you know, that we're all used to. And, you know, which is epidemic and catastrophic. But, you know, these guys committed crimes at even three times the normal rate of all the other rotten criminals we release every day. So it's just unbelievable. Anyway, kudos to the sheriff up in Orange County for pointing out that this is a political masquerade. That's all this is. The whole thing is a political masquerade. And it's about time we start standing up and telling people we're not going to play along anymore. So what they did in California, by the way, that's just asking the sheriff to release criminals is, frankly, criminal in and of itself. The judge should be arrested. He should be impeached, imprisoned, quite possibly caned. But something happened in California over this past week that may just shake all of the sedated out of their state of sedation. When a judge ordered that restaurants could reopen, restaurants immediately started to reopen, and within 48 hours, another judge insisted they cannot reopen. And now that whiplash effect upon the psyche of the drugged and sedated population of California may be enough to shake a few people awake. Enough restaurateurs and bar owners are finally going to say, okay, well, now that we have one judge ruling against another judge who said this about another judge, and there wasn't a doctor in the room, maybe we can all realize that we can stop playing along with this silly masquerade and just get back to living our lives. And maybe we can focus now on trying to live them a little better than we did before instead of participating in all of this. And so I want to do a few stories. Oh, let me do this before. I told you there was only going to be one more mask story. I was wrong. I apologize. There's a couple more. A couple more COVID stories. We go right now to the science, really, file, where the headline says, wearing a used mask could be worse than no mask at all. That's what it says. And there's a study. Okay, listen to this. The New York Post reports that wearing a used mask could be more dangerous than not wearing one at all. And I question that because I just I don't think that's true. I don't think wearing a mask prevents a medical issue for 99.9999% of anybody. It's a social issue. Right? It's a mind control, thought control, behavior control, humiliation tactic that I find politically and spiritually and morally offensive. But I've never asserted that wearing a mask is make you sick or it's bad. Anyway, there's a study now published in the Physics of Fluids. That's a publication. The Physics of Fluids rolls kind of nicely off the tongue. The Physics of Fluids. Anyway, this study was published by author Xingzhang Ji. That's, yes, because all the white kids are no longer pursuing physics degrees. Well, the only person who can publish a study here, his name is Xingzhang Ji. That's actually his name. Xingzhang Ji used a computer model to track how face coverings affected airflow and particles and yada, yada, yada. All right, Xingzhang, tell your story walking. Because we're sorry to inform you that computer models are no longer considered trustworthy. In the pursuit of, virtually anything. I mean, perhaps the weather. I mean, go ask Neil Ferguson what we think of computer models, Mr. Xingzhang Ji. Anyway, but he wants to insist that he has some sort of scientific evidence that masks are bad for your health. Which is, whatever. Mr. Ji says, quote, we hope the public health authority strengthen current preventative measure to curb COVID-19 transmission. like choosing a more effective mask, wear a mask properly, and avoid using a used or expired surgical mask. Unquote. So Xinjiang Xi's bottom line here is that we need to buy lots of new masks from China. What? Who's the author, Xinjiang Xi? Is he related to Xi Jinping? Is it possible that he's working? Buy a many, many new mask. We have a very good high-quality mask. We send you from China. It's a very good mask. Very, very good. All right, there we go. So I'm not buying that. Meanwhile, it turns out that the 85% ICU capacity trigger that Gavin Newsom set out in California just happens to coincide with the average ICU capacity any given flu season in the state of California. The NOQ report says in any given year, most parts of California reach 90% ICU capacity in December, usually due to the flu. But the flu is non-existent this year, by the way, they just happened to mention that. Anyway, Dr. Brad Spellberg, Chief Medical Officer, LA County, USC Medical Center. This is not a lawyer. This guy is not a judge. This guy is not a host on The View. This is not Dr. Jill Biden. This is an actual doctor at USC Medical Center, says, quote, "We typically run well above 90% of our ICU beds occupancy because it's such a busy trauma center." And so this is a normal year, folks. And what the politicians did, they said it so that normal would scare the hell out of everyone and that we would lock down again and stay home. Be scared. California, by the way, is the fifth largest economy in the world. And locking it down is essential to the Marxist takedown of Western civilization. Until Donald Trump's feet leave the ground and he's no longer associated with the White House, they're going to keep this all going. And you know what it is about Gavin Newsom? Gavin Newsom and his handlers, whoever it is that programs him and gives him what to say every day, they hate the idea of God-fearing people living free. And they're compelled not so much by their desire for the acquisition of money and power and the souls of men, but they are compelled by their hatred of Jesus Christ to destroy anything that reminds them of Jesus Christ, even if it destroys them too, even if it costs them their fortunes as well, even if it destroys what they have. Gavin Newsom and those of his ilk are governed by a criminally insane mindset. They're maniacs, hell-bent on defeating God, even if that means committing suicide. It is the Weekly Review. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Speaking of governors and the criminally insane, speaking of all that, let's go to Governor Cuomo, who has been accused of sexual harassment by at least one former aide. That's right. And I've got a commentary from PJ Media written by Brad Margolis, who reminds us of what Governor Andrew Cuomo said the last time we had a very high-profile case of a political figure accused of some sort of sexual misbehavior. And Mr. Margolis takes us back to the Brett Kavanaugh hearings, where Governor Cuomo himself insisted that Brett Kavanaugh should take a polygraph test. That's right. Does Andy remember that? Because we're calling on Andrew Cuomo right now to take a polygraph test as the closet full of sexual harassment accusers start to pour out. Well, that's unless they're killed, of course, or their family members are threatened, or, you know, they wake up with a horse head in their bed. That's the only thing that's going to stop the avalanche of women, and possibly men, who are about to accuse this lowlife of sexual harassment, of which it's always, you could always see it in this guy's eyes, how he is. I could always see it. I could smell it on him. Anyway, let's go back in the Wayback Machine as Governor Cuomo addressed President Trump and everybody else in regards to the accusations against Brett Kavanaugh. Cuomo said, "I believe Dr. Ford's testimony is very compelling. Only a political skeptic would find a reason to disbelieve her. What is her possible motive to lie? Here is one basic fact that badly hurts Judge Kavanaugh. Why won't he take a polygraph? It is the one powerful piece of evidence that seriously damages Mr. Kavanaugh's credibility and the credibility of his Republican supporters. Ask him to take a test, Mr. President. If you do not insist that Judge Kavanaugh take a polygraph, it will be evidence that you are putting political motivation over your constitutional obligation. Do not aid and abet a lie, Mr. President. Demand a polygraph." Was that too much Bernie Sanders in there? I don't know what that was. You try to do an Andrew Cuomo, but it's hard to come off with jowls that big and having that many drinks that early in the afternoon. It's a tough one to nail down. Meanwhile, from the widespread infiltration file, a report on something we reported back in June, a Chinese national working for Zoom, who the Daily Caller points out is a California-based tech company. Really? Are they California-based? Daily Caller, another so-called conservative news outlet. This guy worked for Zoom, a California-based tech company. Well, it turns out this Chinese national spied on Zoom conferences at the behest of Chinese intelligence events held, and let's see, shut down events intended to commemorate the anniversary of the Tiananmen Square massacre. So the Justice Department is just releasing this announcement this past week. The guy's name is Jing Zhang Jin. We've had, how many Jings do we got? How many Zhangs? Hey, when they say Jing, I Zhang. And this guy Jin's. Anyway, Jin collected information about platform users and provided them to the Chinese Communist Party intelligence services. The Justice Department is announcing charges against Jin, who they can't find. The Chinese government required Zoom. If you remember when I reported this back in June, the Chinese government required Zoom to install Jin as a liaison in order to continue doing business in China. So China said to Zoom, "Do you want to do business here? Well, here's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to work with our intelligence service to spy on people and to stop people from saying things that embarrass us." And Zoom said, "Okay, we'll do that." Why? Because they're not a California-based tech company. They're a Beijing-based tech company. Anyway, let's see. Oh, here. The complaint said the Chinese authorities blocked access to the video conferencing on September 8th, 2019. News outlets reported on September 9th, 2019, that Zoom was, well, just looked suspicious, that's all. And we reported on this back in June when we heard about it. I don't know what else to say about this. Oh, the CEO of Zoom met with the Chinese Communist Party back in October of 2019 to discuss a plan on restoring Zoom service in China, and apparently that worked out just fine. So all you people who are using Zoom, you're participating in a surveillance operation by the Chinese Communist Party. Congratulations. Way to go. I won't use Zoom. Me personally. All right, but so what? Big deal. Meanwhile, from the politics file, the woman at the center of the latest Chinese spy intrigue, Fang Fang is her name. Fang Fang apparently had a close relationship with Eric Swalwell. helped him with his reelection campaign. She may have helped him in other ways. And she is in China hiding out because she's a spy. And Eric Swalwell is on the House Intelligence Committee. We have a statement from Eric Swalwell's office. Quote, to protect information that might be classified, Mr. Swalwell will not participate in any reporting on this because it's classified, is what it is. Yeah. Meanwhile, Xi Jinping is living the life of every godless tyrant, from Nimrod to Nebuchadnezzar to Julius Caesar to Joseph Stalin to Xi Jinping himself. Yeah, he's paranoid. He's tightening foreign and domestic security apparatuses. And he says that China's number one threat is foreign forces helping hostile separatist Chinese forces. Here's the thing about these communist dictators is they live in constant fear because they're so evil and they know that everyone around them has every right to kill them at any moment. And so that's how they feel. And this insatiable appetite for power eventually produces a lifestyle that is like living in hell. Xi Jinping lives in hell, convinced that everyone is going to kill him at every moment. And what's odd about this is all throughout history, men have wanted to aspire to this lofty lifestyle. I don't understand it, but that's it. I guess that is the most extreme expression of human self-absorbent indulgence and self worship, along with just that desire to lord it over other people. And you think you're going to end up all powerful and happy, and you end up miserable. Xi Jinping is locking down the security organs. Listen to this. Now, says Ping's mouthpiece, security is no longer just the job of the party's security organs, but all the top cadres have a role to play. The organs. So I'm reading Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago, and he talks about the organs. And they are the security apparatus by which you can arrest anyone for anything, imprison them, and even have them shot for virtually anything. They're called the organs all through the book. So that struck me as very eerie and creepy. I've got a quote here from the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, senior analyst Adrian Zenz. He says, they've been very secure, able to infiltrate a lot of places without a lot of pushback, talking about Chinese intelligence. They've been able to infiltrate a lot of places without a lot of pushback. Suddenly, they've got pushback, and it's quite a shock to the system. It's only now, right? Isn't it weird how only since Donald Trump was elected have we pushed back against this infiltration of the Chinese? And now I just hope that if Trump is to be deposed in this coup, that he's able to expose as much of this as possible before he's driven from office. And that Xi Jinping is on his way to the end of those like Nebuchadnezzar and Julius Caesar and Joseph Stalin, and hopefully someday Xi Jinping. And so now another piece of evidence that the current pandemic is just a complete delusion, an illusion, a scam, a ripoff, a lie. You've been schnookered. Here's some more evidence from the science. Really? File. The New England Journal of Medicine. This is from December 17th. And I did not believe this headline because it's from the Liberty Loft, which is a right-wing news aggregator. And you just always have to check these things out because on the left, on the right, there's a lot of kooky people. There's a lot of people hungry for clicks and eyeballs, and they'll put all kinds of crazy headlines up. So this is when I double-checked against the New England Journal of Medicine's official Twitter feed. That's right. The New England Journal of Medicine has recommended removing gender assignments on birth certificates. Okay, this isn't GLAAD or the ACLU. This is the New England Journal of Medicine. This is the cradle of American medical prestige, is the New England Journal of Medicine. If you can get an article peer-reviewed, published in the New England Journal of Medicine, you're on to something. Or at least that's what we used to think. It lent some credibility to your research. Well, the New England Journal of Medicine has flushed their credibility down the toilet. Because they now say removing gender assignments on birth certificates. Well, they say that assigning gender at birth could be harmful for intersex and transgender people. The New England Journal suggests that the newborn should simply be classified as a newborn sex until later in their life. Newborn sex, that's in quotation marks, as it well should be. The New England Journal says designating gender at birth indicates that sex is simple and binary. The designation is more complex. And then they go on to say some other things, but... but they kind of lost me at... more complex. Let's see. They want to remove gender assignment in the interest of public health. Huh, public health seems to be rearing its head these days. And they want to remove the personal anguish caused on someone that is assigned a gender with which they do not identify. Personal anguish. Does that qualify as medicine these days? It's the New England Journal of Medicine. It's not the New England Journal of Emotional... whatever, just embarrassing. So will the New England Journal of Medicine ever be considered a serious publication again? Ladies and gentlemen, there may never be a serious publication again if we don't come to grips with this massive disconnect from everything real and true and simple and binary and all of that. It's just... okay, another piece of evidence that the pandemic that you're living through is, let's just say, somewhat overblown. You know how you can tell when people are actually scared for their lives? Is they stop doing ludicrous, radical, ridiculous, stupid, crazy things. Like at the Cartoon Network. From the Queering of America file, the Cartoon Network, which is available in 85 million households in America, has said, quote, here's to not only normalizing gender pronouns, but respecting them. Whether you use he, she, them, or something else, we acknowledge and love you. Mm-hmm. So they're getting on the more than two gender identities bandwagon over at the Cartoon Network. Which, the Cartoon Network is for kids around six. And so everyone at the Cartoon Network, the FBI should be raiding their houses right now, kicking in their doors, confiscating their computers, leading them out of the house with a raincoat over their head and handcuffs. Uh-huh. Let's see. They on social media, they issued comic strips that told children to refrain from assuming that you know someone's gender just by their appearance. There are many gender identities beyond boy or girl. Another comic showed two characters telling a girl who thought there was only two genders that their pronouns were they and them. I'm Alex. Mine are they and them too. I feel seen. What? I feel seen? What is that? I feel seen. S-E-E-N. I feel seen. What is that? Who came up with that? Who has the desire to feel seen? And what does that even mean? That is creepy, weirdo, bizarro. Somebody should be arrested just for that. The Cartoon Network goes on, quote, using someone's pronouns shows respect. We all need to be seen and loved for who we are. They then provided a link to the National Black Justice Coalition, oddly enough. What's with the Marxists going queer? What's with the Marxist black power? When did that intersect with faggotry?
It's always been.
Has it? No. The Black Panthers, they weren't no queers.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-uh. No. They didn't play that. Homie don't play that. Not back then. But anyway, it's a rather terrifying combination, by the way. Militant Marxist, homosexualist. I mean, that's scary stuff. That is civilizational ending stuff, if those people are allowed to freely express their desires and their goals, and if they're allowed to freely congregate and pursue their goals, they will destroy civilization. So radical Marxist, homosexualist, fascists need to be exterminated with extreme prejudice. And we should start by arresting them and putting them on a trial like a civilized country, and then executing them with extreme prejudice. Now we go to the the domestic tranquility file. Bernice Jaramillo Hernandez, 26-year-old mom, faces 2 counts of murder. Police received a 911 call about a woman who had cut herself, Gainesville, Georgia. When they arrived, they found the injured mother along with the bodies of Mateo Miranda Jaramillo, 5 years old, Catherine Miranda Jaramillo, 6 years old. The investigation indicates that Jaramillo Hernandez killed the children and then turned the knife on herself, CNN tells us. She turned the knife on herself. The mother will be formally charged after doctors finish treating her injuries. The sheriff says that the incident is isolated and that they are not seeking any other suspects. Sheriff says there's no danger to the community as a result of this incident. Okay, so there are no other suspects. I would tentatively agree with that, although I'd like to know where the kid's father is. That's all. I just want to know. But there is danger to the community. And this is not an isolated incident. This happens every day in America somewhere. There's a family detonation like this. And I would say to the sheriff that the community is actually in danger. The community is in danger. When fathers abandon their children, which is what I suspect here, again, there's no reportage on even the existence of a father. So unless these children were the product of immaculate conception, there is a father involved. But when fathers abandon their children, society comes apart at the seams. What else can you say about a mother who stabs her 2 children to death and then tries to kill herself? That is coming apart at the seams. That's the definition of coming apart at the seams. You've heard of the fabric of our society. People worry about the fabric of our society. This is it. This is the fabric of our society, is fathers taking care of their wives and their children. That is the fabric, and it is coming apart at the seams. And it was doing so before COVID, before the lockdowns, before the insatiable liberal left made their power grabs. These detonations were happening every day, and they still are. This is the good old days. So like I say, when we do manage to throw off the tyranny of the lockdowners and the insanity of this obsession with this virus, we've got to understand that the good old days weren't always that good. Do I want to do any more of this? Let me conclude with a little bit of crime and punishment from the Mark of the Beast file. There's a proposal up in Seattle from City Council member Lisa. Yes. Yeah, Lisa says that she wants a poverty excuse for what she calls small-time crimes. That's right. Crimes including theft, harassment, shoplifting, trespassing could be excused if the perpetrator claims poverty was their motivation. That's right. Lisa says, well, if you took a sandwich because you're like hungry and you're like trying to meet your like basic needs of like satisfying your like hunger, we as a community will know that we should not punish you for that. Like that. Oh, I'm sorry. That was public defender Anita, who's in support of Lisa's proposal. She helped craft Lisa's proposal. She was with Lisa. Lisa and Anita have a new proposal. If you're hungry, you're allowed to steal. If you're poor or you feel disenfranchised or somehow oppressed, You can trespass and maybe break something and steal something, but only if it meets your basic needs. They say the intent of the proposal is to avoid punishing desperate people just trying to survive. Anita, Lisa, just so you know, hunger is the foundation of a free market and all of civilization. But not without the fear of God. You see, you can't have a free market without the fear of God. And you can't know how to punish wrongdoers without the fear of God. And so you end up trying to find ways to excuse them and literally destroying civilization. Lisa, Anita, they don't get it. They think if someone's hungry, they should be allowed to steal. No, Anita, Lisa, someone being hungry is why they should work. You've got it mixed up, and that's the Mark of the Beast, by the way. That's why this is from the Mark of the Beast file. You know you've taken the Mark of the Beast, where instead of trying to justify what is good and right, even though it's difficult, and sometimes involves judging other people, and sometimes involves judging yourself to be wrong and in need of improvement, instead of that, you start to advocate for what is wrong and what is criminal and what is wicked and what is evil, and you start advocating that as good. That is the Mark of the Beast, and Anita has it, and so does Lisa. All right, what else? I can't do these. Here we go. From the personhood file, Abolition of Abortion Oklahoma has filed... they've gotten a bill into the Oklahoma Senate to ban all abortion. And this is reported for us by pro-family industry hack, funded by the gullible scum and Catholics and the detestable people over at Life News. They say that this bill has been introduced in Oklahoma. It states that every human being has the same inalienable rights under the Constitution, whether they're born or unborn, in so many words. And then the hacks at LifeSite go on to say such bills can be controversial, even among pro-life advocates, because of the uncertainty of them succeeding. When states lose these battles, taxpayers often are forced to pay pro-abortion groups legal fees. Yeah, abortion groups have overturned such laws. There's more hope, they say, in the U.S. Supreme Court that they may finally consider an abortion ban. But it's difficult to say if it would be for certain. But that's the strategy we advocate at Life News, because we are pro-family hacks hoping to just make it to retirement. To abortion, couldn't we just keep it through my retirement so that I can retire comfortably? All right, that's it. That's the pro-life industry, and I'm sick of them. And I'm Doug McBurney. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank you all. I want to thank my friends at realscienceradio.com. And at AmericanRightToLife.com, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview, should the Lord tarry, we shall return next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.